He's a nice, lovable, big teddy bear, Fat.
Sportsline continues on Sports Radio 107.5 and 1400 The Fan.
That's Brady Papinga. We're going to get with Brady here in just a second. I want to remind you here on Sportsline, brought to you in part by our good friends at Papa John's. Go online at papajohns.com. Enter the promo code BrewersWin, courtesy of the 3-1 victory last night over the San Diego Padres, and you'll get yourself half off all pizzas. The Brewers right now hanging on late 3-2 over the Padres to try to take 3 out of 4 in that four-game series and get on to Chicago and Wrigley Field through the weekend. Right now I want to get on to the one, the only, former Packer linebacker. Great follow on Twitter. We'll let you know how you can get a hold of him and stay in touch with him. Always interesting, the goings and comings of one Brady Papinga. Brady, how you doing today?
Hey, what's up, guys? How you guys doing there?
Doing excellent. Awesome. Doing awesome. And I got to tell you, Brady, this leads into your thoughts on LeVar Ball, but I saw a headline, NFL headline. It was actually a football headline, and I want to get your thought on it. It said, CFL team acquires rights to Colin Kaepernick, Johnny Manziel, and RG3. And honest to goodness, the first thing I thought were book rights, movie rights, story rights, definitely not playing rights for them. I mean, you talk about the rogues gallery of quarterbacks were, and I can't even put Mike Vick because that guy had some fair accomplishment in the career. Talk about Kaepernick and Manziel and RG3 and what any kind of professional football might hold for those three.
Well, I mean, I think you got Kaepernick. He's still in the mix, guys, because Seattle's been leaking out information that they'd like him to come in as their backup, and that's not any front or smokescreen. It's by design. They want to hear the reaction of the fan base. They also want to test the team to see how they react. I mean, people have feelers. I mean, and John Schneider, by the way, was that feeler with the Green Bay Packers. Mm-hmm. He would always come down to the locker room, and you know, he'll drop little things like, "Hey, guys, we're thinking of training for Tony Gonzalez." And then he'd leave, and we're like, "What?" And we'd talk amongst ourselves. And, you know, they'd sit back and sort of let things sort of marinate a little bit and see if anything would, you know, creep back up to the top. And, man, that was a colossal failure there by Carl Peterson. Jeez. We would have had, think about it, guys. In 2007, we would have had Tony Gonzalez in nuestro equipo, in our team. Man. And lo and behold, Carl Peterson, and it was all, because I talked to Tony Gonzalez at the Super Bowl, everything was ready to go. Everything was signed, sealed, ready to be delivered in the last second. The former general manager, who, by the way, he had a tough time there, although I respect him, Carl Peterson, with the Kansas City Chiefs, pulled the plug and said, "Nope, you're stuck here, Tony." Oh. But anyway, you always have those feelers out there, and that's what Josh Schneider was doing up there with the Seahawks, and he's doing that because he's legitimately thinking about bringing in Kaepernick and RG3, and then they throw out both their names, RG3 and Kaepernick, for negotiating purposes, you know, just to let everybody know, hey, you know, we're not going to overpay for you because we also feel like a guy like RG3 could come and help us in the same respect that Kaepernick could, which is you're going to hold the clipboard. Our guy stays healthy for the most part, talk about Russell Wilson, and we may need you to come in relief. You know, he's a running quarterback, you know, and if you did, we would still keep the same playbook in place because they're both running quarterbacks. So, but Manziel, you know, he's probably not going to get back in the league. And if they did want to get back in the league, that's where this Canadian Football League's coming in. You might as well go up there, show people that you're willing to play, willing to learn, willing to grow, and that then maybe opens up some doors, and that's, you know, a colossal failure of Tim Tebow. That really made me question his intentions of even wanting to be an NFL quarterback. Instead of going and playing baseball, go up to Canada, bud, or go to the, you know, Arena Football League. Show us that you want to work your craft and convince some of these decision makers that maybe don't like your flavor right now, you know, that maybe you can suit to what they're looking for, which is they want to see you throw the ball a little better, you know. And so the point is that it could be an opportunity for some of these guys, but it's always smart, I would say, that you get some of these fringe guys that whose careers are in the balance. But I'll say this, most likely we will not see Colin Kaepernick ever again in the NFL, guys.
That's Brady Papinga. You know, RG3, you talk about meddlesome parents at times. Before we talk LeVar Ball, Brady, your family and friends, I mean, everybody I'm sure had opinions, but you were, as I recall, a fairly mature kid, if you will, when you came out of college and got to the NFL. Just how did you handle your business contractually and all of that, if you could walk that through us with us a little bit?
Oh, man, that was always done privately. I'd never want to get my parents involved, never wanted to get many of my siblings or close relatives involved, because you know how it is, guys. And it's not that my parents ever had their hands out or anybody does. It's just that there are certain expectations that come when all of a sudden they know how much money's in your pocket exactly, and they know what your liabilities are versus your assets, and you sit down to the dinner table, you know, and all of a sudden everybody's looking at you like, "Hey, man, we know you got more money than, you know, what," or whatever it may be, or vice versa. And or there's another number of other scenarios that possibly could come up that can get a little awkward, you know. So it's best in my – and luckily I didn't have parents or my brothers and sisters that it ever was a problem with, whereas I've seen other families to where, you know, you get that guy who ends up being the, between quotations, the savior for the family, that guy that everybody knew had the talent, had the ability, and you grew up maybe in a rough environment. And I've played with a lot of these guys who all their parents and their grandparents and their cousins and their uncles and their aunts were all pointing to them saying, you're our guy. You're going to get us out of here. And he says, because he's a confident person and he's a guy that believes in himself, oh, yeah, I'm the guy. And he starts promising people, I'll take care of you. I'm going to be a first-round draft. You know, all of a sudden, he does. He becomes a first-round draft choice, gets the money, and everybody's like, well, how about delivering on that promise you made back about 10 years ago? And all of a sudden, you got a bunch of people that you have to take care of, and that money just doesn't go around as well, and then the expectations are there, and then it's tough. You know, I mean, it's really a tough situation, but, you know, you brought up this ball guy, and I hate talking about it because he is so much of an exploiter of his kids in the sense that he's using his kids for his own personal fame, for his own personal satisfaction, which is the worst form of exploitation there is known to man. And his justification always is, well, hey, I'm the one that's training you. I'm the one that's fed you. I'm the one that's put the shelter over your head. I'm the one now that's promoting you. And that's so manipulative because the shelter, the food, the nurturing aspect of anyway, you know, and what he would define as training them, that's a given. You're owed nothing as a parent. That's your job. That's what you committed to when you committed to having kids. And unfortunately for him and their situation, guys, this is a train, like this is a train headed for a cliff that eventually it's going to be a colossal disaster. And the hope, and my hope, honestly, of this whole thing is because I like Lonzo Ball's game. I like his other boy. I haven't seen the middle boy very much. I forget his name.
LaMelo?
But LaMelo's a younger.
He apparently hangs out with mom because we don't see much of her either. But
Yeah, well, she's had health issues, you know. And I live in the Los Angeles area, so you get the, you know, the kind of
inside.
The firsthand insight as to what's going on. But, you know, but these kids play hard, man, and they're good. I don't know if you guys followed Lonzo Ball much in the tournament. He was a phenomenal player in the sense of he was a facilitator. He was a team player. He wasn't like, hey, it's all about me. That was his dad, you know. And I was like, man, that kind of dude, that guy, he needs to be let go. People need to let him thrive. And unfortunately, I don't think he's going to have that kind of luxury with his dad acting the way he's – and his dad showed his true colors, by the way. It was on the Colin Cowherd show yesterday and the way that he treated Colin's female – compadre there. I mean, it just, or comadre would be the correct word, but it was unacceptable. But to me, it's like, that's who he's always been.
Right.
You know, and lo and behold, because the shoe sales aren't going very well, he's in a vulnerable place. He's a little sensitive right now because he realized that what's happening with him, guys, is he's realizing one thing. All this cockiness, this arrogance that he's throwing out there to try to create leverage with these shoe companies it's tough for him right now. Not that it's blown up in his face, it's tough because here he is, trying to sell these shoes for $500 a pop, and he's making right now pennies. He's probably losing money in one hand. And then on the other hand, he's looking at these multi-million dollar deals that his son could have, like in the bank guaranteed. They don't have to go through all this establishing a brand business, establishing your shoe amongst all the other big guns. You don't have to do any of that. You don't have to go through this time where you're losing big, and there's no guarantee that you're actually going to make anything. And I think that came to a head there on the show when he was getting called out as how many shoes has he sold and his true colors came to the surface. But like I said, this is a train heading for a cliff, and it's going to be a colossal disaster. I hope his kids survive it.
Brady Papinga here on The Fan. Brady, something you mentioned talking about contracts, how everybody knew to a penny what you were making. There's a preoccupation, obviously, and a fascination.
Oh, no, I didn't want anybody to know
exactly
what I made.
Well, and that's what I was going to ask you.
You can.
The injuries, salaries, people have preoccupations with as much info as they can get on this. Would the NFL be better off if they could make salaries confidential?
Oh, I love that. That was always one thing that I questioned. You know, and I was at a Dodger game, as a matter of fact, with one of my friends, and we were sitting there, and I didn't know any of them at the time. And so I'd get on ESPN.com or whatever to look up their bios, and lo and behold, it was like their stats and then their salary. And I'm like, who cares? You know, and I asked him, I go, what's the big deal about knowing what his salary is? And he's like, dude, it just makes him that much more mystical, that much more bigger than life when you know they're making millions of dollars or whatever. And I was like, that makes sense. So I would say that from a player's perspective, you would like that kind of privacy. But then at the same time, I would say from a league promotional perspective, they want that to be as public as possible for the reason that my friend had mentioned to me, that it creates this mystique that helps with the promoting of the league. If you're, think about it. If you're out there looking at a bunch of guys that, you know, aren't making very much money and they aren't rich and famous, between quotations, is it the same kind of pandemonium? Is it the same kind of following versus somebody that, you feel like is this multimillionaire, successful, big time, you know, as not to make a play on words, but a big baller, you know, to where they're out there, they're, you know, doing things that maybe, you know, in additionally to their athletic prowess, but they're, you know, financially doing things that maybe you dream about. I mean, would there be a difference is the question. And I'd say absolutely there is. And so that's where it's more of a marketing ploy. But yeah, from a player's perspective, I would say most players, oh shoot, maybe not. Most players you'd think would do that, but no, I mean, think of all the guys that are publicizing their contracts, and they publicize them in a way that's tilted. You know, because we know in the NFL, I mean, you could say, hey, I signed a 5-year, $100 million deal, and everybody's like, ooh, that is awesome. But if you really, like, went to the details, you're like, okay, really, the only guaranteed is about $500,000. So really, it's a 1-year, $500,000 deal. But you could go and tell everybody it's a 5-year, $100 million deal all you want. And you do that, you hear that all the time through the media. So I guess most guys probably do like it, but
oh, yeah. I hear there's, guys
there's
all the time,
a bunch
Brady.
Of us that don't.
I mean, they say, yeah. You know, I mean, would she really want to hang out with me if she knew I wasn't actually making the $100 million over 5 years, only the half million over one?
Brady, you talk about salaries, and I mean, couldn't help but think of the running backs right now. I mean, LeGarrette Blount just signs for peanuts, and he just led the league in touchdowns. That's indicative of the position and the kind of devalue, and how you brought this up before the draft. You like Christian McCaffrey, but he does everything. Now Leonard Fournette, a between-the-tackles guy, has the most guaranteed money in the league amongst running backs. It's funny how, like, the rookie pay scale intersects with, the devaluing of the position. It's interesting.
Yeah, it was the worst choice. And people think I'm crazy, but if you look at the numbers, the sheer numbers, and I tweeted this out, and the best example is, and the Packer knows this better than anybody, but the worst draft picks the last 2 years in terms of value, not in terms of how they're going to perform or they have performed on the field, but just value, what you get for what you give up.
Yeah.
Ezekiel Elliott was the worst last year, and people are like, he was the rookie of the year, blah, blah. I mean, no, and he wasn't the rookie of the year, but was he rookie of the year? I thought wasn't that Dak Prescott was rookie of the year, right?
That's a good question.
I forget. But anyway.
Yeah.
But anyway, the point there is it's not that his performance wasn't up to par. It had to do with where you took him. You took him at a spot to where, you're paying him more money than you're paying any running back, guaranteed. And then you're passing up other more impactful positions that are far more difficult to find later on in the draft. For example, imagine if you were the Cowboys last year and you had Alfred Morris as your running back, starting running back,
right.
Dak Prescott as your starting quarterback or whatever, but instead of getting Ezekiel Elliott, and I don't know all the data, but let's say you go and you get a phenomenal D lineman or D end rusher, you know, all of a sudden they may look different. You know, they may have been a little bit. I mean, that may have been the difference playing against the Packers this last year. A little bit more pressure on Aaron, a little bit more push in the middle. You know, that game was so tight that may have pushed the Cowboys over the top. I mean, really, is it that big of a difference what you would have got out of Alfred Morris and Ezekiel Elliott? And, you know, and that's the same argument with this year with Leonard Fournette. With the kind of money you're paying these guys, it doesn't make sense. And the best example of this is the draft in 05. I mean, this was the classic, colossal mistake ever when you have Ronnie Brown going to the Miami. And these are all, I think they're top five picks.
Top pick.
Ronnie Brown. Then you had
Cadillac Williams
going to Tampa, and then you had Cedric Benson that went to
small
the
hands.
Chicago Bears. And
hands.
Lo and behold, he did have some small little
still does, I think.
Mitts there, didn't he?
I'm willing to bet he still does.
I'm sure, as long as they're still attached. But, I would say this, that every single one of them passed on Aaron Rodgers. I mean, you're looking at it like, imagine if they would have taken Aaron Rodgers.
Well, didn't need a quarterback.
Well, that's what they thought. You know what I mean? But it was
But they took them.
Exactly. And that's the value system, you know, the teams. And that's why you have the have-nots and the haves. And that's why the Jaguars are the Jaguars. And you get Tom Coughlin so obsessed with wanting to run the football. And I get that, but he forgot his history. His history of having success running the ball was, you know, with guys like Brandon Jacobs, a fourth-rounder, Ahmad Bradshaw, a seventh-rounder. You could have picked, think of this, you could have picked basically two backs that are the complementary, one that's more of a power back and the one that's more of a quick kind of scat back, and counted him as a Leonard Fournette. And then you get the ability to interchange them so they're rested, and then you have more options with each one. I mean, I don't know, man. It's just it does not make sense, and it's tradition. I've talked to a number of scouts and evaluators of why they make those decisions, why they tend to revert to that when the numbers just don't add up, and every single one of them says the same thing, guys. Tradition. We're drafting off of tradition, and that's how the Jaguars did it. And the year before, that's how the Cowboys did it, and they were terrible picks because they didn't look at the sheer numbers in terms of analytics. They looked at just tradition.
It was Dak Prescott, by the way.
Dak Prescott. There
you go. He
did
win the Rookie of the Year last year.
I think
it was. That's right.
We've combined to create a running backs charity called Touchdowns for Peanuts, led by
LeGarrette Blount.
Well,
they still make money now. Well, you know, and LeGarrette, come on. I mean, think about it. You're going against Tom Brady. If you're forming a defensive strategy, there's no way I'm thinking, ooh, I'm going to stack the box. Yeah, I'm going to stack the box and run cover one. You know, and I mean, teams tried that kind of stuff, but and if you can pull it off like the Falcons were able to do the first three quarters of the game of the Super Bowl, man, you could cause them issues. But it obviously wasn't sustainable, and teams tried to do that and couldn't do it throughout the year. And so they had to go to more pass, you could say, heavy defenses or strength defenses to where now you're leaving the running game open. Of course, a guy like LeGarrette Blount who runs hard, he's going to be a heck of a changeup because as even a linebacker, when you're playing Tom Brady, I'm not thinking, okay, I got to be a physical down-the-hill run stuff, or I'm thinking, okay, I got to be sharp in my run pass keys, and I got to lean more towards dropping into coverage or covering than stopping the run. So you're facing that mentality coupled with a big bruiser. It's a tough position to be as a running back. And now all of a sudden you get LeGarrette Blount, you know, in a situation to where – yeah, I mean, in Philly, nobody's going to respect Carson Wentz. I don't. I'm not going to go out there and run a bunch of cover two all of a sudden and be like, ooh, he may throw it over the top of us if we shift any one kind of coverage. You know, by the way, a lot of teams run cover one as a base anyway, like the Atlanta Falcons and Seahawks do, meaning that it's tough to run the ball in those kind of – and look, LeGarrette Blount wasn't a guy that anywhere outside of New England really did anything. I mean, he had some good years in Tampa. I think he had a 1,000-yard year and one in the 700 area. But then he goes to Pittsburgh, walks off the field in the middle of the game. Another bad move there. But you know what? I mean, it's going to be one of those things where you're not investing a lot in the guy and you're highly incentivizing him with the deal. So, but no, I mean, running backs has been proven over the last 10 years that you can get solid. I mean, Howard last year for the Bears, man, and obviously a lot of people think Jamal is going to be like him this year. I mean, you can find guys like a Jamal Williams, like a Jordan Howard, that are going to be just as productive late in the draft or middle of the round of the draft as these guys that are picked in the top five, you know, and the same could be said for a lot of these guys that are out there trying to demand $10 million a year when in fact it's like, nope, we can get a guy for about three. And he'll give us a heck of a production in that kind of role. And we know that, you know, if you go and lead the league in rushing, the last time anybody's won a Super Bowl is in 1994 or whatever it was when the Dallas Cowboys and Emmitt Smith won the Super Bowl, and Emmitt Smith won the rushing title.
That's Brady Papinga, former Packer linebacker. You can reach him on Twitter, at Brady Papinga. Before we let you go, there very well may be tapes and memos to this effect. Imagine for a second, if you will, and you're on pace for like a six-sack game here, Brady, today, so I want to put you to the test a little bit in crunch time. Roger Goodell and his closest associates are sitting in New York, and they're talking about what one rule change, really, in-game rule change, needs to be made. We've got to get our best, greatest mind on it. What's Brady Papinga doing? Brady, you get to pick one in-game rule, and you can get, we'll give you about, I don't know, $100,000 to really analyze this thing between now and the beginning of training camp. And your recommendation to the CEO, the commissioner of the NFL, Roger Goodell, will stand. What in-game rule and why would you choose to focus on for that $100,000 to earn it between now and the start of training camp?
Oh, it wouldn't be one rule. What it would be is how replay is handled. What I would do is I would ensure that we had an additional ref assigned to every game, and his or her job was simply, you're looking at a review of every single play. And if the play that you see in review real quick doesn't align with how it's called, you are immediately buzzing down to the head official, stopping the game, and you're telling him in his ear or her ear, this is what needs to be called, and he immediately corrects it. There's no, you know, jeopardy. Ding. Okay, we're going to run over here, or they're going to run out. Now they're going to run out the old tablet, you know. No, there's none of that. It's a simple, nope, this is what happened, change it, and we're moving on. I mean, seriously, that's what I want to see.
Wow.
You know, and I think everything should be under consideration except for the pure judgment calls, which are your pass interference calls, and there may be a few other in there, but that's one where that's a pure, you got to see it, because I'll tell you what, if you could go into slow motion and look at how some of these guys used to cover, like Charles Woodson, they would have been called for pass interference every single time. I'm telling you, okay? So the pass interference one, you got to let that one sort of eat. But in terms of holding, clipping, face masks, fumbles, I mean, those interceptions, is it a catch, is it not a catch, head-to-head contact, you know, those kinds of things are easily and instantaneously can be decided on by somebody that's just their job. And then they communicate what they see, and we're moving forward, and away we go.
I always think that when I'm watching the game, and I'm like, okay, if I can see plain as day that that's the wrong call from my TV thousands of miles away, then why does it take 7 minutes to change a call and respot the ball? It's ridiculous. Brady, I got to get your thought,
though.
No question. How would you feel if you had an clause in your contract where if you get to this weight by this date, we'll just give you $55,000.
That's a hypothetical.
It makes me think of Eddie Lacy, man. That was so funny. I laugh because he weighed 253 pounds today. Mm-hmm. He won himself $55,000. I was like, when in the world does somebody weighing in ever break news? You know, when is that ever breaking news? You know, I guess Eddie Lacy it is. But you would never have that issue with me, man. I mean, and there's a lot of guys that I remember. Colin Jenkins. It was unreal. I mean, it was you'd walk in, and I didn't even know what the weighing time was, because I always knew I was going to be, you know, hitting it for me personally. But you'd walk in, and, man, that sauna, the hot tub would be just packed. Old Colin Jenkins, he'd be in the sauna, in the hot tub, and he'd have this cup next to him where he'd just be spitting all the spit out, trying to lose as many pounds as he could, because apparently he pounded a big rack of ribs the night before with his buddies and pounded a bunch of, you know, liquids, whatever it would have been, and lo and behold, he's overweight, and he's going to be fine, you know? And so you get all these guys just trying to push it, and then lo and behold, they're like a half pound under, and they're yelling and screaming and crying. Some of them shed tears. But, no, it's one of those things that it makes me laugh that we're talking about with a running back. But, hey, I do like this, though. I do like, unlike in Green Bay, in Seattle, they're embracing Eddie Lacy in the sense that, hey, he's a 250-pound back. We're not going to try to make him a 230-pound back. If 250-pound is literally what he feels the best at, even though he may be a step slower or whatever, we're going to let him play at that position, because that's what it was like with Jerome Bettis, man. That guy wasn't a slim turkey. That guy was a bowl in a closet, a China closet. He was a bowling ball, and he weighed a lot more than 250 pounds, and he did pretty good in that kind of capacity. So I do enjoy that about what the Seahawks are doing, but come on, I don't need to hear about his weight anymore. I'm done with it. Let him go play. Let him do what he's got to do, and we'll see from there what happens.
Don't know if he's named after the Golden Boy, but that's Brady Paul Papinga.
That's right, man. Way to look it up.
Very nice. Well, I had to know where to send that check.
Yeah, okay.
I mean, to solve that problem there. Big picture guy.
Oh, man, it would solve all of our issues, right?
Replay.
I mean, come on.
I mean, gee, it reminds me of a conversation. Who knew Replay was this hard? I mean, this is pretty complicated. You narrowed it down there.
It's unbelievable. I mean, come on, let's just move on. I mean, the games, I'm not getting ADHD, and it's just because everything's so accessible. And, you know, everything is so instantaneous these days. It's like, I can't take it when there's a little five-minute lull in an NFL game anymore. It's like, come on.
True.
I'm even calling the game. I remember when I was calling the game, it was Arizona versus the 49ers this last year, down in Arizona, and our booth was literally right next to the officials that would review all the calls. And I would look over their shoulders, and I'm like, come on, I'm banging on the window. Guys, let's get going. It's obvious what the call was. You know, but, it's the name of the game these days. Keep people engaged. Keep the downtime minimized as much as possible, and they would do that.
Great stuff, Brady. Really appreciate it.
Hey, my pleasure, guys.
Take care. The pride of BYU, Brady Papinga.